Meanwhile, Tilly had made it to Leipzig in Saxony. And after the city initially put up resistance to his pressure for food and quarter for his troops, he was able to occupy it on September 16th. Tilly then sent his army to guard the north of the town. On September 15th, Gustavus's army of 23,000, linked with the Saxon force of 16,000 men, led by von Armin and John George himself, at Dubin, and went moving south to Leipzig. The Saxon army was resplendent in fresh uniforms, while the Swedes, who had been marching themselves ragged, appeared to one observer, quote, like kitchen servants with their uncleanly rags. On September 17th, the two armies met at Breitenfeld.
The imperial force was only slightly fewer than the Protestants, 37,000 to Gustavus's 39,000. Tilly was older, cautious, and patient. Pappenheim was young, daring, and impetuous, classic situation.
Mm-hmm.
There was apparently a legend in Pappenheim's family that someday a son of their house would conquer an invading king, and perhaps Pappenheim felt that call to destiny. While scouting outside of Leipzig at Breitenfeld, Pappenheim's forces spotted the Swedes, and he sent word to Tilly that he could not safely retreat. They would have to make battle. Tilly was annoyed, felt his hand was forced, but deployed the army forward.
As soon as the Imperials were in range of the Protestants, they started an artillery bombardment of the Swedish position. The Imperials, arranged in a wide, narrow line of the now classic squares of pike and shot, the Tercio formation, immediately noticed the new arrangement of Gustavus's troops. Looser squares of cavalry, checkered with smaller squares of musket formations, both much more mobile and responsive to changing battlefield conditions. Furthermore, the musketeers had been drilled in a deadly new technique. The first line would kneel so that the first two lines could fire at once. Then they would peel to the back of the group and reload while the next two lines fired. As the two sides exchanged fire for nearly 2 hours, the Swedes were able to fire their muskets at 3 to 5 times the rates of the Imperials.
Another factor increasing attrition of Imperial forces is that in this day, cannonballs did not explode upon impact. They just rolled down the battlefield, and you're essentially bowling for your enemy's troops. Now, because the Tercio is a much deeper formation, during the artillery bombardment, these cannonballs could just bounce through lines and lines of Imperial troops and take them down, whereas the much more shallow and more mobile and wider, more widely spread Swedes are able to avoid that kind of damage. Eventually, Pappenheim loses patience and ordered his cavalry to charge into the cavalry on the Swedish right. The Swedish cavalry and musket combo proved resilient, and the line held, with Pappenheim's forces charging again and again into point-blank Swedish musket fire.
Believing Pappenheim's charge to be a signal, Tilly's right flank cavalry charged the Saxon militia on the Swedish left. The militia held for a time, but they lacked the discipline of the Swedes. Soon, John George... Dear George,
God damn it.
Spooked and retreated north, riding nonstop 12 miles straight to Ellenburg.
What are you good for, dude?
The Saxon line dissolved into chaos and followed, chased north by the bellowing red-cloaked Croats who led the Imperial cavalry.
Gustavus's left flank was now dangerously exposed, and though he had not ordered either charge, Tilly himself saw the opening and commanded his main mass of Imperial pike and shot tercios to sweep the Swedish left flank. But though more powerful, these tercios are achingly slow compared to the Swedish formations. So while the mass of Imperial troops crawled across the broad field to take advantage of the opening, Gustavus commanded his left side to reposition at a right angle to his main line, to basically move and re-solder a line at a 90-degree angle to where it had been in advance of the Imperial charge. That means they were able to meet Tilly's assault head-on. Gustavus appeared to be everywhere, according to sources, screaming his troops along until he was hoarse, unarmored save for his billowing cloak.
Back on the Swedish right, after rebuffing 7 charges from the impetuous Pappenheim, the Swedish cavalry general Benner finally ordered a counterattack against the exhausted Imperial troops and drove them off the field and back south. Pappenheim and his men, thinking only of the booty they had stored up in Leipzig, and retreated back to the city. Gustavus Adolphus then appeared and personally took command of Benner's cavalry, storming them back across the field, now behind Tilly's army, and to the Imperial's unguarded artillery. Gustavus seizes the artillery and, because of his combined forces, turns Tilly's own guns on the rear of Tilly's army, now engaged in a fearsome fighting with the Swedish left flank.
Remnants of the Saxon cavalry reappear for the north and join in the battery of the Imperials. Tilly's arm is now caught in a death trap. Swedish infantry and cavalry to their front, Saxons to their right, their own guns battering them from their left. Tilly knows he's lost and orders a retreat. The Imperial army flees, pursued by Swedish cavalry.
As the sun set, the thick dust cleared, 12,000 Imperial troops lay dead on the battlefield and scattered along the road back to Leipzig. All 20 Imperial cannons were captured. 7,000 Imperial troops had been captured, and after some short contract negotiations, they were now Swedish troops. Tilly himself was wounded in the neck and had his arm shattered. After 12 years of conflict, the Protestant forces had finally scored a W.